Hello and welcome to this week's program. I'm Paul Nelson. With all the books out now on animal communication, one might think the supermarket tabloids are having an effect on book publishers. And while that yet may be the case, the hard, cold scientific evidence is beginning to emerge that suggests there is something to the notion that not only is animal communication possible, but animals might have some very important information for us. The main man behind the notion that there is proof to the paranormal abilities of animals is respected scientist Dr. Rupert Sheldrake. His new book is Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home and Other Unexplained Powers of Animals. He has conducted numerous experiments with dogs and other animals, has collected research, and has developed some interesting theories about this phenomenon. JT is a terrier and the subject of hundreds of experiments to determine how he knows when Pam, his owner, is coming home.
On more than 200 occasions where we've studied JT's behavior, reacts when Pam is setting out or just before she's setting out to come home from whatever distance, whatever time of day or evening. There are some occasions he hasn't done it. He's reacted anticipating her arrival on more than 80% of the occasions we've studied. There are some occasions he hasn't done it, though, and most of those have been when there's a bitch on heat in the adjacent apartment.
Dr. Sheldrake's background in biology exposed him to the theory of morphogenetic fields, and his own theory is that animals are able to communicate telepathically through a similar phenomenon he calls morphic fields, one of several field theories he is now developing.
And morphogenetic fields are just one kind of organizing field, the ones for developing organisms. Behavioral fields organize the behavior of organisms through coordinating the activity of brains. Social fields organize the activity of social groups and coordinate the different members of the group. So members of a flock of birds or a school of fish can turn almost simultaneously without bumping into each other.
Renowned scientist Dr. Rupert Sheldrake is our guest today. Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home and Other Unexplained Powers of Animals is the book. I hope you enjoy this week's program. Thanks for tuning in. This program is made possible in part by a contribution from Doe Bay Resort on Orcas Island. Celebrating 20 years of continuous operation from a core village built in 1908, Doe Bay offers year-round accommodations with basic waterfront cabins, natural foods, hot tubs, hostel, and waterfront camping in the San Juan Islands. Doe Bay Resort, where Mother Nature can be rediscovered. On the web at www.doebay.com. And by Windowology, providing blinds, shades, shutters, draperies, and more. Serving the Puget Sound region from Kent, Washington. More information on the web at windowology.com or call toll-free 800-700-8612. The interview with Rupert Sheldrake was originally broadcast in October of 1999 and will commence in a moment. For more information on guests of this program, check out the website for It Plays in Peoria Productions at www.inpeoria.org. That's INPEORIA.org. On the site, you'll find program summaries, guest contact information, other airtimes for this program, and you can view past programs to purchase a CD copy of shows, most of which are available for $10 plus $2 postage and handling. You'll also find a link to the SPLAB, the Northwest Spoken Word Lab, the Intergenerational Spoken Word Performance, Resource, and Outreach Center, a project under the nonprofit umbrella of It Plays in Peoria. So check out what we're up to at www.inpeoria.org. That's INPEORIA.org. Another village building project of It Plays in Peoria Productions. Many religious and spiritual traditions have prophecies of the end of time. The Mayan calendar doesn't even go past winter solstice 2012, suggesting that day is the end of time. But one could interpret that phrase in many ways. If Rupert Sheldrake's theories are accurate, the end of time is tied in with such paranormal phenomena as the feeling that someone is staring at you, and the fact that some dogs know when their masters are coming home. How can we make such connections? Stick around. Today we're honored to have one of the world's leading scientists in our studios. Dr. Rupert Sheldrake studied natural sciences at Cambridge and philosophy at Harvard. He holds a PhD in biochemistry from Cambridge and was a fellow at Clare College, Cambridge. He's the author of several books and more than 50 technical papers, and his new work is Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home and Other Explained Powers of Animals. From London, England to Pacific Northwest, we welcome Rupert Sheldrake to the program. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You had an experience with animals, I mean, as many of us had, as a child, brought you a lot of joy. Scamp was the name of your dog, and he wasn't the only pet you had. So you had joyous times with animals as a child.
We kept a lot of pets, and I was very keen on animals. I think the ones that fascinated me most were homing pigeons, because they did something so mysterious, and that mystery of homing pigeons has stayed with me all my life, really.
Yeah, and your experience with Scamp?
Scamp was a great dog, and you know, the affinity that one feels with dogs, I developed at a very early age with him.
You had a work experience with the animals as a teenager that was perhaps the antithesis of that childhood joy. Maybe you can tell us about that internship.
Well, I became a biologist. I studied biology at school because I was really fascinated by animals. Then I had this job between school and university when I was 17. And I was working as a technician, a temporary technician in a drug company research lab. When I got there, I discovered this was, in fact, a vivisection laboratory. Cats were operated on daily. Mice were injected with poisons to see what dose would kill them, and so on. And there was this terrible carnage every day, and piles of dead animals were thrown out into a bin every evening for incineration. This really made me think. I was doing biology because I loved animals, and I was working in this place where animals were systematically poisoned and vivisected on a daily basis. Something had gone horribly wrong. And I think that was the experience, really, at an emotional level, that made me think that present-day biology had taken a wrong turning. It was not really about life. It was more about death. It was more about... in our lab classes, we didn't so much work with living organisms. The first thing we did was to kill them. So this, I think, was what started me thinking and made me later come to the idea that we need a more holistic approach to biology. It was only recently that I remembered this experience as a teenager that had and this emotional impact. It wasn't an intellectual impact. I didn't question the intellectual foundations of science, but there was something that made me think it had gone wrong.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because just now I'm reminded of something I'd planned on bringing up later in the interview, and perhaps we can discuss it in more detail. But that dogma against scientific experiments with animals provided, I mean, the only science we do with animals is when we're doing that kind of science, when there's no regard for animals as beings, as sentient beings. And so it would seem to me that there's a connection between that notion and the dogma against research into animals and how they can help us. And I guess we'll get more into that, but... I'd like to get into the book, and perhaps your first notion that you had a sense you were going to write a book based on the notion of paranormal abilities in animals.
This really grew out of my previous book, which is called Seven Experiments That Could Change the World, published in 1994. And in that book, I've been trying to find simple experiments to do with everyday phenomena that could ideally be done on budgets of $10 or less, which is why that book subtitled A Do-It-Yourself Guide to Revolutionary Science. One of the experiments I proposed there was to test for telepathy in dogs through this phenomenon of dogs anticipating owners' arrivals. Dogs go and wait at doors or windows 10 minutes, even half an hour before someone gets home. I proposed doing research on that to see if something more was going on than merely routine expectations or hearing familiar car sounds. That aspect of my Seven Experiments book led to an enormous public response, and it really led into this research. I spent 5 years doing research, and I discovered that these unexplained powers of pets, the animals we know best, are a fascinating topic. There's a huge amount of information. Millions of people keep pets. Millions have observed unusual behavior. And that's really what led into the present book.
It makes sense that it took you 5 years, because just reading the book, one is almost overwhelmed by the amount of evidence and the different facts that you pull up, and it's really quite a work of scholarship. And in terms of the abilities that animals have, you break the abilities up into three main groups: telepathy, the sense of direction, and premonitions. Perhaps a brief description of each, and maybe some examples.
The telepathic faculties I'm talking about are where animals, dogs, cats, horses, and parrots, are the star performers here, pick up what their owner's thinking. Now, many people would say, well, how do you know it's not just body language, noticing subtle cues and stuff? Well, in some cases, when the owner's in the same room, that may be the case. But what I've been particularly interested in is how they pick up their owner's thoughts or intentions, even when their owner's not in the same room. For example, a lot of cats hate going to the vet, and they pick up when their owner's planning to take them, and they disappear. The big problem for owners and for vets, because we asked vets in North London, practically every veterinary clinic we asked had a problem with cancelled appointments with cats on a regular basis. So you might think, well, this is just them seeing the owner getting out the carrying basket and so on, but that's not the case. A lot of owners don't get out the carrying basket because they know the cat will disappear. And some people make appointments for the vet while they're at work. Then they drive home to pick up the cat, and instead of being on the doorstep where it usually is, it's nowhere to be seen. So I think that the cats can pick up people's intentions to take them to vets. Dogs can pick up people's intentions to take them for walks, even if they're in another room and it's not a usual time. Animals can pick up people's intentions to give them special treats, food, at unusual times. Somebody's just thinking of getting something out of the refrigerator for them, and they bound into the room. But the most spectacular example is the one that I based the title of the book on, the ability to anticipate arrivals, because here the person's miles away when this happens. They can be 10, 20, 50 miles away, even 1,000 miles away or more if they're flying from a city in another part of the world. And in these cases, the animal's anticipation, going and waiting by the door or window, can't be explained in terms of seeing the owner or picking up clues from them. Most people would say, well, how do you know it's not just a matter of routine or habit or regular timing? Well, in most cases, it's not. People who comment on this phenomenon, who've noticed it and who find it striking in their pets, are well aware of the possibility of routine. What's interesting is that most of the cases I've heard about are not people returning at routine times. We've also done experiments where we videotape the animal. We can see exactly when it's waiting. We have time-coded videotapes. We've done more than 250 of these experiments. And the person comes home at randomly selected times. I call them or beep them on a beeper to tell them when to come. They don't know in advance when this will be. No one at home knows when they're coming. And to rule out the idea that the animal's just picking up familiar car sounds, we have people travel in taxis or get friends to drive them in unfamiliar cars. The animals still know. It's definitely not routine, not familiar sounds, at least in the case of the dogs I've investigated in most detail. It seems to be a telepathic phenomenon. The animals are responding to people's intentions. They, in fact, start reacting before people get in the car to come home. They start reacting when they're just planning to get home, getting ready to leave the building, getting their coat on, getting their bag packed, and starting on their homeward journey.
We're chatting with Rupert Sheldrake. He's a renowned scientist and author of Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home and Other Unexplained Powers of Animals. I'm Paul Nelson. Yeah, it's just amazing. It's like animals will scan our brain for a mental picture and be able to see that mental picture of us taking them to the vet or taking them out or giving them a sausage or whatever. and have a sense that that is coming. That's telepathy. And I think what we ought to do, rather than getting into the other groups, is to talk about a couple more examples of that. The videotape experiments were done with Pamela Smart of Ramsbottom, England, and her terrier, JT. And I'd heard about these experiments from Dr. Mona Lisa Schultz, who specializes in intuition. And she told us a bit about them, but perhaps we can get it from the source now.
Well, we've done many experiments with Pam and JT. This is the main dog I've worked with. I've done experiments with several other dogs as well that have given similar results. But JT is the most intensively investigated dog in the world for this phenomenon. JT, on more than 200 occasions where we've studied JT's behavior, reacts when Pam is setting out, or just before she's setting out to come home, from whatever distance, whatever time of day or evening. There are some occasions he hasn't done it. He's reacted anticipating her arrival on more than 80% of the occasions we've studied. There are some occasions he hasn't done it, though, and most of those have been when there's a bitch on heat in the adjacent apartment.
And he's a little preoccupied.
Yes, that's what it shows, that JT can be distracted, and there are some things even more important than his owner's arrival. Some of the times he's failed to do it have been when he's been very tired or sick. But most of the time, more than 80% of the times, he goes to the door and waits for her in this characteristic way. It's extremely significant statistically. The results are highly repeatable. In experiments with human telepathy, one of the problems is the experiments are so boring, usually, that people get bored with them and their scores fall off. But luckily, dogs never get bored with their owners coming home, so you can do this kind of thing over and over again.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. Well, the other main group that you have in terms of the dogs and their quote-unquote paranormal abilities is the sense of direction. I mean, we see these newspaper stories quite often about, and in fact, you quote one about a dog losing his family in Indiana and finding him at a place he's never been, at their new home in Oregon.
Yes. Well, there's two things here in the sense of direction. One sense of direction is homing, going to a familiar place. And that's relatively common. Many dogs and cats do this, and it's the same kind of behavior we see on a regular basis in homing pigeons. Many people keep pigeons to race them. It's a common sport. There are 5 million pigeon fanciers worldwide who race their pigeons. These pigeons are routinely taken hundreds of miles from home. In England, they often have races of 500 miles or more. They're released in the morning, and they're usually home that same evening, flying at an average speed of 60 miles an hour, and they fly straight home. It's not as if they're just fanning out and randomly searching the countryside. It would take them weeks to find their home that way, if they found it at all. They fly and they head off, usually more or less straight away in the homeward direction, and get there. So this is homing, and it's related to the larger problem. It's the tip of the iceberg, in fact, of a much larger problem, which is migration. We just don't know how migrating animals like swallows and Arctic terns and marine ones like salmon and we just don't know how they do it. Salmon smell the home river when they get near to it, but that doesn't account for getting thousands of miles across the ocean to the right estuary. Nobody knows how these migrating birds do it. They get some clues from stars, some clues from a magnetic sense, but these in themselves are not sufficient to explain it. So we've got a big mystery in homing and navigation here, and this is one of the things I talk about in my book. The other sense of direction is even more mysterious, and that is the kind of example you gave, where animals find people who've moved away instead of finding a place they're familiar with, homing. In some cases, the people can move away, and the animal finds the people hundreds of miles away. And that's extremely mysterious, because it's not going to a place it's ever been before. What it's doing is homing on a person, not on a place.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And you say this as it's a big mystery, and it is to the scientific world, but we have a sense that you're honing in on that mystery as well. Premonitions was the last example of that. Dogs that know, for example, when their owners are about to have an epileptic seizure and other such ways that they save lives.
Yes, this is quite common. Many epileptics have dogs that warn them of oncoming seizures. It can be half an hour or more in advance. Nobody knows how the dogs pick it up. The people themselves certainly don't know. And having a dog that gives them warnings is enormously valuable to them, because one of the worst things about being an epileptic is not knowing when a seizure is coming on. So somebody could be out in a public place, going down a flight of stairs. If a seizure comes on then, it's dangerous. And at the very least, it's extremely embarrassing, because people fall to the ground, have convulsions, they're often incontinent. No one wants that to happen in a public place or when they're unprepared for it. And these dogs give them enough warning to get to a safe place to sit down or lie down so they don't come to any harm when the seizure occurs. There are organisations in the United States and in Europe that are training dogs as seizure alert dogs, but many epileptics have found their animals just do it anyway without any training. They spontaneously give these warnings. The other thing about these warnings is they're extraordinarily reliable. They get it right practically 100% of the time. Nobody has a clue how they do this, and there's been no detailed research on this at all so far. But it is a remarkable phenomenon.
It's not just dogs, though. It's a rabbit that you cite in the book. And in fact, the rabbit who had that ability died, was replaced by another rabbit who was able to do it as well, lending credence to the notion of morphic resonance. More of which we'll get into as we go along.
Yes, that's right. Other animals can do this. There's the rabbit you mentioned, or a couple of rabbits you mentioned. Also, some cats can do this. But the star performers in this warning are definitely dogs. There's many more cases of dogs than other animals. But I dare say other animals could be trained to do it. And if people paid more attention to their animals' behavior, maybe more epileptics who have animals might notice their pets doing this. There are a lot of people who have seizures who are not aware that animals have this ability and may not notice warnings they're trying to give them.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the dogma against dogs and other animals, and that skepticism, which comes from certain scientists, Dr. Richard Wiseman from your country, a chief among them, is, you believe, anti-scientific.
Yes, well, there are certain kinds of skeptics who are not just raising reasonable objections and making reasonable comments. There are certain people for whom the very possibility of telepathy is ruled out as a dogmatic presupposition. They're convinced that none of these abilities can really exist. So the only issue is to find out, when they seem to exist, is to find out whether people are being telling lies, being fraudulent, or whether they're simply deluded by chance coincidences, selective memory, and so forth. The dogmatic skeptics are quite immune to evidence. Nothing will convince them that these things happen. And that's what I'd call an anti-scientific position. People who, on the one hand, try to suppress scientific inquiry, trying to prevent people doing this kind of research, by ridiculing it, making sure there are no grants or facilities for this kind of research, and also just rejecting any evidence that may come up on the grounds it's impossible. That's a profoundly anti-scientific attitude, but luckily these dogmatic skeptics, they're sort of scientific fundamentalists, are quite rare. They're very vociferous, but there aren't very many of them. Most scientists, in my experience, are actually much more open than they may seem. Most of them don't want to admit in public that they're interested in these things because they're afraid that the skeptics will jump on them and accuse them of being soft on pseudoscience or something like that. So many will keep quiet in public, but since I've come out, as it were, in my interests in these subjects, I often find scientific colleagues in private say, you know, this is great what you're doing, and my dog does it too, and I only wish there was more of this kind of thing in science, but I don't like to talk about these things at the lab because, you know, people will think I'm weird. It's extraordinarily common, that kind of attitude.
They'll be doing it in 10 years anyway. Mm. Dr. Richard Wiseman, probably a professional skeptic, does he and other people like him keep you sharp by making you investigate everything that they talk about and being able to prove it wrong?
Well, Richard Wiseman's different from your run-of-the-mill armchair skeptic. He's a British skeptic who actually does experiments. Most of them simply dismiss all this stuff from the comfort of their armchairs, but he does experiments. On the other hand, he goes into these experiments with an attitude that the point of the investigation is to just to un, un,
to find out where the fraud is or where the flaw is. I don't think he's got an open mind, but he sometimes appears to have one. In the case of these dog experiments, I invited him to do some experiments with JT, the dog I've done so much research with. He did some experiments with JT, and they gave essentially the same results as my own. I show the graphs based on his data in my book. However, he invented a criterion for JT's behavior, just looking at 2 minutes of the dog's behavior instead of the whole 3 or 4 hours in each experiment. And by inventing extremely artificial criterion, he claimed that the dog hadn't passed his test. He could only say this by ignoring most of his own data. And he then went on TV in Britain and said, oh, it hasn't worked, and published a paper saying it hasn't worked. I've recently published a paper showing exactly what the dogs did and showing exactly why his interpretation, I think, is completely invalid. But anyone interested in seeing his data compared with mine can see it in my book, and I think anyone who's seen the data plotted on graphs sees that he had actually replicated exactly the phenomenon that I've observed.
And more information is also available on your website.
Exactly. There's a lot of information about my research there, and most of my published papers are available on the website in the full text version.
Very interesting. I was doing a search on your name, and sure enough, your own website came up. So let's give that out as we close this first part of the interview. That website URL, www.sheldrake.org. We're chatting with Rupert Sheldrake. He's a renowned scientist. His new book is Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home and Other Unexplained Powers of Animals.